Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Planned Parenthood is closing two Utah clinics after President Trump cuts all federal reproductive health funds to the state. And budget cut updates. Weber State University eliminates 49 staff positions, 89 classes. Utah State University cuts 14 academic programs and merges five colleges into two. And Utah Valley University closes cultural centers and lays off staff. Later in the program, we'll be talking with Salt Lake Tribune reporter Courtney Tanner. Right now, we bring in Salt Lake Tribune State Watch reporter Emily Anderson Stern. Emily, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
So let's talk about this Planned Parenthood. I guess the immediate news is the Trump administration has cut off funds. Tell me about those funds.
Yeah, so for the last 50 years, the federal government has provided some money to clinics that provide family planning services, right? And that means generally birth control, testing for STDs, other services around reproductive health to help pay for those services for low-income Americans, to help them be able to plan their families, when they have children, how many children they have. Those funds have never included payment for abortion. But, you know, since Trump has taken office, he's frozen those funds to a lot of clinics in the U.S. And that includes, you know, some of the clinics that have had their funds frozen include Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country. It also includes some other clinics and states kind of somewhat at random, but Planned Parenthood is definitely among the entities that's been targeted. And in Utah, the only entity to receive Title X funds is Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. And that means that the Trump administration has essentially pulled all of the funds that pay for these family planning services for low-income families in Utah.
How much money are we talking about?
In Utah, it's about $2.8 million that was supposed to come this year to help pay for those services for people. According to Planned Parenthood Association of Utah, last year, they used Title X funds to provide care for about 26,000 people.
So which clinics will be closed?
So right now, Planned Parenthood Association of Utah has eight clinics in Utah. And those are all along the I-15 corridor for the most part. The two clinics that will be closed are the northernmost clinics and the northernmost clinic and the southernmost. And so one is in Logan, which is a little bit outside the I-15 corridor, and the second is in St. George. And those clinics, you know, notably are where the other clinics are in Weber County, Salt Lake County, and Utah County. When it comes to some of the state's most rural populations, those clinics are the closest to access for some folks in the state.
You point out in the story that Logan and St. George are both college towns. I guess college students would be availing themselves of these services, at least in some cases.
Yeah, you know, in Logan, as you know, there's Utah State University, and in St. George, there's Utah Tech University. So, you know, these clinics often serve younger populations, right? College students, including, you know, newly married couples a lot of times. But notably, you know, the Logan Clinic is about a 20-minute drive from the Idaho border, and Idaho has one of the most restrictive abortion laws in the country and some of the most restrictive laws around reproductive health care. And so Planned Parenthood Association of Utah served about just over 230 Idaho patients last year, and many would go to the Logan Clinic because of its proximity to Idaho.
Any word from the Trump administration? Do they issue a statement with this? Why they're targeting especially Planned Parenthood?
Well, they sent letters to Planned Parenthood that Politico actually obtained a copy of and reported on. But I reached out and they wouldn't say a whole lot other than they had told some entities that they were reviewing whether they were compliant with Title 10. And in the meantime, were holding on to their funds. But the letter, went into a little bit more detail. What Politico reported was that the Trump administration said they were reviewing whether, specifically Planned Parenthood clinics were in compliance with executive orders from the Trump administration around eliminating diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. And also, they, accused Planned Parenthood of essentially facilitating illegal immigration because they do offer health care to people without permanent legal status. And so those are some of the reasons that they named, which really are, not necessarily the first ones that people would have thought the Trump administration would name when they were trying to pull funds from Planned Parenthood. But those are some of the reasons that they cited.
So, I guess in other states would have, I guess, other organizations besides the Planned Parenthood, right? That you say these are targeted to Planned Parenthood. Utah only has Planned Parenthood, right, providing some of these services.
Right. And so that makes Utah one of, just about seven states that have lost the entirety of their Title 10 funding. And for Utah, it's because there's just one organization, Planned Parenthood Association of Utah. And so really, there's not going to be any federal funds at all coming to, subsidize reproductive health care for people who are uninsured or who, otherwise that where they're maybe low income, but not quite low income enough to have Medicaid or have free health care. There's essentially not going to be any of this kind of help for people to get affordable birth control and STD testing and, cancer screenings. There's a pretty long list of treatments that are provided through Title 10 that now will be not quite as affordable to access, but also, maybe it may be more difficult to get into a clinic to access them as there's fewer clinics around the state. And, Planned Parenthood may no longer be an affordable option for people.
What is Planned Parenthood of Utah saying about all this?
For them, it's frustrating. During the last Trump administration, they'd also had stopped getting Title 10 funds. That was because of what opponents at the time called the gag rule, right? Where they, if a clinic referred any of its patients to an abortion provider, then the Trump administration said they could not receive Title 10 funds. And because Planned Parenthood said they wanted to preserve that choice for their patients, then they stopped accepting Title 10 funds. And they were among a number of Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country to do that. But Planned Parenthood sued the Trump administration. Eventually, what happened was when President Joe Biden entered office, he restored the previous Title 10 rules. And then Planned Parenthood Association of Utah began accepting these funds again. But, in talking to the current leaders of Planned Parenthood Association of Utah, they see this action as much more permanent. And draft budget proposals from the Department of Health and Human Services have said that they're looking at, defunding Title 10 altogether. And so Planned Parenthood's leaders really aren't sure if they'll ever have this money coming into the state again to help patients. And so they're trying to plan a little differently this time around to ensure that they can keep, at least most of their clinics open.
You mentioned this. I want to have you go back and talk about it a little more. The inception of Title 10, it seems like Title 10 has become somewhat controversial, at least in the Trump administration's eyes. Signed into law in 1970 by President Nixon. I don't know what the debate was. I don't know what was the original goal?
The original goal was essentially, to help lower income Americans have access to the services that help them to plan their families. So really, that allows them to decide how many children they have and when they have them, really, so that they can ensure that they have enough money to provide for their families and can have children in a way that works with their income. Really, Title X it's never had any money that goes toward abortions. But I think because of how many Americans will think of Planned Parenthood and associate it with abortions, even though that's in a pretty small percentage of the care they provide, the Trump administration has kind of tried to take action to target it. But this time around in the second administration, I think it's also getting wrapped up in the DOGE push, right? Where the Trump administration is trying to slash its budget, reduce employees. And so this is also in a way being seen as a way that they can spend less money. And so maybe gone altogether. And I will also note that the Trump administration has talked about wanting to find ways to make it so Americans are having more children. I don't know if this necessarily is meant to play into that strategy. They've talked about giving more funds for assisted reproductive treatments. So, like IVF, but, not reducing access to birth control certainly could have the effect of more children.
It's interesting. Title X, as you mentioned, is not supposed to be used for abortions. Shireen Gourbani, who's the interim president, I guess, of Planned Parenthood, had a very interesting quote. She's talking about when she was younger, that access to services that Title X pays for helped her to not have to get an abortion.
Yeah, her point essentially was that because she had the resources to plan whether and when she might have a family, she didn't have to turn to, other options like abortion. And so planning ahead and being able to work with a healthcare provider to decide, when you have children and have resources to make those decisions helped her avoid having to make that choice.
So clinics, Planned Parenthood clinics in Logan and St. George are going to close. When are they closing?
So at the end of the month, essentially, right? So they've got about a week more that they're open. So pretty quickly here. Not much warning. Logan will close on April 30th and St. George will close on May 2nd.
So just one more thing, related topic, moving to abortion in Utah. The legislature passed a near total ban, right? Remind me of that law, and then it's in the courts. Where is it?
Yeah, so in 2020, the legislature passed a near total ban on abortion. Back then, abortion was considered under court precedent a constitutional right. And so states couldn't entirely ban it. They could place some limited restrictions on it, but they couldn't really ban it in the way that Utah wanted to. But when the Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade, then Utah's near total ban went into effect. Planned Parenthood Association of Utah almost automatically filed a lawsuit. And then a few days later, the law was blocked, and it's been blocked since then. So currently abortion's legal up to 18 weeks in Utah. And currently or waiting the next hearing in that lawsuit, which is scheduled for spring of 2026. So, you know, for the foreseeable future, abortion is legal up to 18 weeks.
All right. Let's move on to another couple of stories. By the way, we're talking with Emily Anderson Stern, Salt Lake Tribune State Watch reporter, on Behind the Headlines. So you and Robert Gerke are doing some updates on the union referendum. This is a referendum to overturn a law that the legislature passed this past session, barring unions in the public sector from collectively bargaining. So the unions had to get signatures equivalent to 8% of the people statewide, which they appear to have done, double that. And also 8% in at least 15 Senate districts. So Lieutenant Governor's office? Anyway, the signatures are being verified. So where are they with that requirement to get those Senate districts?
And I will actually know that it's county clerks who are verifying.
Oh, county clerks. Okay.
And so some go at different paces than others because some offices have more resources than others. But right now, so we've actually got a bit of an update this morning. The folks working toward a referendum have hit 11 counties of the or 11 districts of the 15 Senate districts required, where they have to pass the threshold of 8% of active voters as of this morning. And are at about 120,000 of the over 140,000 that they have to get. And so, you know, they're making quite a lot of progress there, but there's still more time where county clerks are counting signatures. And, you know, we anticipate that there will likely be some more districts passing that threshold Monday.
All right. And they have to get to 15, I guess. Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah, we'll.
29.
So tune in to sltrib.com for Emily's and Robert's updates there. Just one more story. We just have about a minute here, Emily. The passing of Judge Judith Billings. Just tell me briefly why she is notable.
Yeah, so Utah created its Court of Appeals in 1987. And, you know, when it was created, Judge Bangerter had appointed seven people to the court, and among them were two women. And Judith Billings was among those women. And, you know, I spoke to one of the current appeals court judges, Gregory Orm, who has been on the court since 1987. And he said, you know, back then there were so few women in the legal profession that people in the bar were pretty surprised that there were women appointed to the court. And, you know, Judge Billings was among them. And she continued throughout her career to be a mentor and role model for a lot of women entering the law at a time when, you know, less than 10% of attorneys nationwide were women.
I was really struck by her, kind of this from her bio, before, quoting from your story, before becoming a lawyer, she was a high school teacher, stay-at-home mother. And when her first husband died, she became exasperated with the competency, or I guess lack of competency, of the attorneys helping her sort out legal matters. So that's why she decided to go into the law.
Yeah, she, you know, when she was a young mother, she went through something pretty tragic and hard, where her first husband passed away. And, you know, she was trying to figure out how she could continue to provide for her children. And she was frustrated with some of the attorneys she was working with on legal matters after her husband's death. And she decided that she was going to do that herself.
Yeah, and she's, you know, the story, people need to go read it, sltrib.com, but definitely remembered as a mentor, among many other things, Judith Billings' passing. We'll be talking on this part of Behind the Headlines with State Watch reporter Emily Anderson Stern. Thanks so much, Emily.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you. Coming up following a break, we'll be turning to reporter Courtney Tanner. We'll get updates on cuts, legislative mandated cuts at various universities. We'll also talk about a new program at University of Utah, whereby returning religious missionaries can get credit for their missions. Much more following a break. You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. More following this. You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. This part of the program, we bring in Salt Lake Tribune reporter Courtney Tanner. Courtney, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Happy to be here.
Good to have you on. So let's start with budget cuts. You had reports just this week about Utah State University, Utah Valley University, Weber State University. I'm sure more reports will be coming on other universities. So I guess a good starting point, remind people what the impetus here is, right? The legislature is mandating this.
That's right. So this came through kind of two-ish bills, we'll say, during the legislative session. One was HB1, which is a base budget bill. It might be SB1. Anyway, they did change the base budget bill, and they took about 10% out of the instruction costs for colleges, each college. And so each college has a share of a $60.5 million cut. And then through HB 265, schools can essentially earn their share of that money back as long as they reinvest it in high demand and high wage programs. And what's kind of pushing this is that state leaders have said that they would like to essentially see more efficiency in higher education.
So let's start with Utah State University. Their share of the budget reduction is about $12.6 million. That's on top of a cut, I think, from last year. So what is Utah State University doing?
Right. So the first thing that they announced was merging five different colleges into two. It's since become six different colleges into two. But essentially what they're looking at is kind of consolidating how many colleges and departments they have. And then this week they announced kind of on top of that, that they're also reducing how many academic programs they'll have. So that's anything from majors to emphases to certificates, that kind of thing. And so they were the first college in the state to kind of release a formal list of what programs would be cut.
So there's, for example, College of Humanities will now include arts and science, right? And then there's some other college consolidations.
It's kind of a longer list. The ones that kind of stand out, I guess, are most of them fall within the College of Education and Human Services. So a lot of it's like teaching kids how to be educators in specific topics, if that makes sense. So like deaf and elementary education is out, or ASL interpretation is out. Communication within agriculture specifically is out. So like agriculture stays, but agriculture communication doesn't. And so it's kind of like more specific areas like that are being cut. There's also an environmental engineering bachelor's degree that's being cut. That it was kind of a surprise.
Yeah, but you would think engineering would be something legislature would want to keep, but environmental engineering, do we know, is that low enrollment or why on that one?
Yeah, it's a good question. The school didn't specifically say on that one. You're right. You know, the legislature has specifically kind of highlighted engineering, business, and nursing as the areas that they would like to see more of, because they're saying, you know, these are areas of growth for jobs. These have high wages. So it is kind of an anomaly on this list. I will say the interim president, Alan Smith at USU, is essentially, he said that there wasn't a single metric that kind of determined this. I mean, low enrollment was among those, but it wasn't just like one number, he said, that made a decision ultimately.
Also, the associate degree for theater in Price, the USU Eastern, is out.
That's right. That one's kind of an interesting one as well. It seems to be the only one targeted at the Price campus. And it is, you know, it's a humanities degree, which I think was a lot of the heartburn with these cuts in the first place, was that the liberal arts, the humanities, the social sciences would be the ones on the chopping block. You know, you had professors saying they don't measure up by your same, you know, metrics of a high salary upon graduation, but that doesn't make them less valuable.
So USU is encouraging voluntary separation, right, to retire a bit early. I guess they're going to see what they get with that. What's President Smith saying? Will there be actual layoffs?
Yeah, that's right. Kind of an unfortunate situation, but one that's playing out, across public higher ed, in the state. But yeah, USU and other schools are starting with these voluntary separations, which are, retirements, early retirements, resignations, and then kind of seeing, how many people do elect to do those before saying how many people will be laid off. But the president has said that layoffs are likely, essentially, that personnel is the highest cost for most colleges. And it's just kind of going to happen.
What's the timeline for all of this?
It's really expedited. It's interesting. May 9th is the day that public colleges and universities, there's eight in the state, need to submit their first plan to the Utah System of Higher Education, the first draft of their plan. And then by the end of the month, they submit their final version to the System of Higher Education. And then at the June 6th meeting of the Board of Higher Ed, that will be kind of a presentation of all of the plans, essentially the cut plans, and then there will be two more reviews by the legislature, but the final goalpost is September.
Let's move to Weber State University. They recently had a, I guess, a gathering of faculty and staff. Interesting. One person said it's like we're in the Hunger Games. There's some distress among the faculty. What are the cuts happening at Weber State?
This was an interesting one, yeah. Some of the other schools, it's been kind of like an announcement, an email, and this one was a town hall where it was announced. So faculty, professors, staff, employees were all kind of present while President Brad Morrison at Weber State announced the plan. And so, you kind of saw feedback in real time, of what people were thinking of these cuts. And I mean, I think what President Morrison said kind of applies to every school that, like this isn't something that the schools asked for. This isn't going to be easy for anyone. This isn't, nobody wanted this within higher education. And so, he said we're doing the best we can to be compassionate with our cuts. But at Weber State, it's 49 faculty and staff positions, and then 32 academic programs. So about double what USU is cutting as far as academic programs.
I guess for any of these colleges and universities, it's the people, right? The teachers are going to be the biggest part of the budget.
Yeah, it's kind of an inevitability in a lot of ways. That is really the highest cost for public higher education is personnel, employees. You just have, you have a lot of administrative positions, you have staff positions, you have faculty positions, and all the different ranks within that. And then you have, all of the employees that just keep a university running.
So, Weber State, what sorts of programs or classes are being cut?
Yeah, lots of different ones, obviously 32. And then, so 32 academic programs cut again. That includes majors, degree emphases, certificates, minors. And it also amounts to 89 different courses, specifically different classes. And the cuts at Weber State, I would say it was even maybe a little bit more pronounced in the liberal arts and humanities. German and art education are two majors that are being cut. Jazz study is one of the certificates that's being cut. Ethnic studies, queer studies, women and gender studies, linguistics, those are all minors that are on the chopping block.
There was an interesting exchange in that the university town hall. One of the faculty members asked President Mortensen, "Well, why are you caving to the legislature?"
Yeah, it was interesting, and I think that that's a kind of a frustration that's repeated again. I think every school is kind of a microcosm of the bigger scene, but there is this frustration, and there was this accusation during this Weber State town hall that essentially that the president of the school was pandering, that he was just doing whatever the legislature wanted, and he wasn't pushing back. And he kind of countered, "Hey, look, they do provide a large part of our budget that keeps the lights on, that pays for our faculty. They pay 75% of the faculty cost, salary cost, the legislature does." And so he said basically like, yeah, they do have control over us, and we do kind of have to do what they say. Essentially, that's how this works in this state.
So Weber State, I know, has a pretty significant nursing program. Nursing programs will be restructured. I'm seeing, I guess, restructured. I guess that's administration. Programs won't be cut back because that's specifically one of the ones legislature mentioned.
You're right. That is something the legislature would like to see expanded, largely because there's quite a number of for-profit colleges in the state that offer nursing degrees. So there's some competition to produce nurses. But yeah, Weber State, they're going to restructure them. So there is some changes as far as administration of those go. And then they're also going to be delineated based on what degree you're getting. So it's, a master's, bachelor's and associates, and that's how the programs will function moving forward is based on the degree.
I want to mention while we're on Weber State, you had another story, quite a few stories, on universities, higher ed. Weber State is adopting or wanting to adopt a unique tuition plan. I guess about half their student body is going for an associate degree, the other half to bachelor's, right? What's President Mortensen wanting to do there?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty interesting idea, and I would say that the state's commissioner over higher education called it innovative, and it is. So essentially, if you are a student that is below a certain number of credits, below 60 credit hours, you now have a tuition rate that's frozen at a lower rate than if you're working toward a bachelor's degree. So the hope is that if you're trying to go for your associates, that 2-year degree, that you can save a little bit of money and that the cost is essentially more comparable. It's not there yet. This is just the start, but will essentially, hopefully, with time, be comparable to a community college rate. So you're not going to a 4-year college and paying that 4-year rate to get a 2-year degree.
I guess one of President Mortensen's concerns is I'm trying to remember the statistics from your story, Courtney, but Weber County had a pretty high rate of students not finishing their degree.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've actually never looked at those numbers before, and so hearing that, I started kind of digging into them. And yeah, the U.S. Census collects who essentially has a bachelor's degree or doesn't finish, but Weber and Davis counties, which is what Weber State serves, do have that kind of highest rate in the state of particularly along the Wasatch Front, who go to college but don't actually get a degree. And so the hope is with this plan, it will save students money and push them to complete.
So the idea would be to at least freeze the tuition for associates. I guess in the future they would like to reduce that cost, right? Encourage people to finish up their associates.
Yeah, President Mortensen had put this plan forward to the Utah System of Higher Education, presented it to the board. It didn't make it into the final budget for the system this legislative session. They did kind of a consolidated budget where they all kind of came together and agreed on it, and it didn't make it into that budget this year, but it did kind of capture the notice of lawmakers, and some of them said, this is a really interesting idea. This would take some funding, but it would essentially lower the rate for an associate's degree even further and actually put it on par with the community college prices in Utah.
Let's move to Utah Valley University. Like I said, you've been busy.
Yes.
Mandated by the legislature and these institutions of higher learning are trying to comply here. So Utah Valley University, I was interested to read that after last year, right, when the legislature had an anti-DEI bill, they had kept some of their multicultural centers or a multicultural center.
Yeah, it's interesting. So last year we had HB 261. Try keeping those straight because they're
Okay.
all like HB 265 is the budget cut and 261 is the DEI bill. But the DEI bill specifically said, if you're going to have a cultural center, it has to be open to everybody. And most schools in the state responded by saying, okay, we're going to close our cultural centers. So like Black cultural centers, women's cultural centers, LGBT centers. Every school in the state but UVU shuttered those. And UVU basically took the approach of, okay, we're going to rename kind of the overarching center. We're going to call it the Center for Intercultural Engagement. And we're going to keep the services for LGBT students, multicultural students, and women that fall under that umbrella. And we're going to offer them to everyone as the bill says that we can.
So this time around, it's budget. It's budget, I guess that's why they're cutting.
It's both. So they are saying that the legislature essentially has put pressure on them to close these centers after all, to do what the other schools did, even though that wasn't supposed to be required as part of the law, that they were supposed to be allowed to keep their centers open as long as they served every student. UVU is saying, look, we're facing pressure at this point to close them under the anti-DEI law and also the budget cuts. So it's kind of a confluence of both of these bills that are pressuring the school to now make some changes.
Some students were saying that they were disappointed that these cuts, this decision to cut, was made in the absence of the university president, Astrid Jimenez. She's on leave because her husband died. What were they saying about that?
Yeah, President Tuines has really made a name for herself as just being a champion of diversity and inclusion in what these centers represented. And so, UVU had kind of held on to them for a year, and that was at her direction. She wanted them to stay in some form. And now they're kind of going away right when she's out. And so there was some tension over that. I think at the end of the day, students at UVU understood that the school's hands were essentially tied by the legislature, that they didn't have the choice, but they just kind of felt hurt and confused a little bit, not having their president there.
So students gathered in what they called a solidarity gathering. It turned out to be kind of a funeral for this center and these programs. What were they saying?
Yeah, it was kind of a really sad but touching, mourning in a way. They came together and they waved flags and they cheered each other on, they gave hugs, they cried. But they basically said, these centers were really important to them. A large amount of the students there at this gathering were LGBTQ students who talked about what having a specific lounge on campus for that community meant to them, that they could go there and feel safe being who they were and meet other people like them. And they just felt love and community there.
So this was pressure from the from the legislature, right, to complete I guess the anti-DEI bill, but budget pressure as well. What else is UVU doing to comply on these budget reductions?
Yeah, UVU is also cutting staff, so it's going to be kind of a common refrain that you'll see. So, USU, Weber, now UVU have all said we're going to have to cut staff. So UVU cut some staff positions. It said that most of those were already kind of taken care of with these voluntary resignations, and so it didn't have to lay off a lot of people, but it did have to lay off some. And I would say that Jim Mortensen, who is acting as the school's president right now, said that, these are painful cuts. They don't want to cut people, but it was kind of a necessary thing that they had to do.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. We'll head toward a break now. We're talking with Salt Lake Tribune reporter Courtney Tanner. We'll continue that conversation following a break. Here are the headlines, the stories we'll be talking about. Class credit for serving a Latter-day Saint mission. The University of Utah will now offer just that. And a judge ruled that the University of Utah did not have to help a sex assault victim because the attack happened off campus. We'll have more following this.
Which hasn't been set yet, but you would pay a fee essentially for how many credit hours you're given. So it would be like, I don't know, $50 a credit hour. And if you get 5 credit hours, 50 times five, and that would essentially be the price you would pay.
No, for many years now, a returned missionary, God, probably returned Peace Corps. Anybody who's picked up a language could and still can get credit for that language acquisition. But this would be kind of something a little bit similar.
Yeah, similar, and it's a good reference to kind of show how this will work. But yeah, if you had previously done a religious mission or done foreign service, and learned, a new language, you could then come back to a public university and college in the state. Most of them offer this kind of thing, and BYU offers this too, but it doesn't offer this new missionary credit. But anyway, you would come back and you would do kind of a language placement test, and it would test for your proficiency, and then you could either get credit or test into a higher class level with a language. And so that's similar to how this missionary one will work, but the missionary one could apply to general education requirements or major requirements, and it's more based on the skills you learn, like people skills, communication, that kind of thing.
Has the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints commented on this?
Yes, there was a comment from a member of the church, Clark Gilbert, who is the commissioner over the church's higher education system, which includes BYU, and basically said, there are a lot of skills that students learn on a mission, and he supports the idea for getting credit based on that.
When does this start?
this fall, and it is
Okay.
actually important to note that you don't have to be an incoming student. You could be a current student there and still do it, and it could be prior missionary work. So if you're a student there now who did a mission 2 years ago, you could apply for this.
Oh, interesting. Any word at all of whether other institutions might pick this up?
I wouldn't be surprised if this becomes a trend. I mean, the LDS Church, obviously, as we all know, has a huge, body, a huge population here in the state, and I think this is a good way to attract LDS students to your school, particularly at a time when an enrollment cliff is going to come up in the state and already has in other states. And so this is kind of a way to say, hey, look, we appreciate what you've done, and you can come here and get credit for it.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines, and we're talking with Salt Lake Tribune reporter Courtney Tanner. One more story, Courtney. This is a very important one, hard-hitting one. Here's the headline: A judge ruled that the University of Utah didn't have to help a sex assault victim because the attack happened off campus. Tell me a bit about this.
Yeah, this is a kind of a heartbreaking case. It was originally a lawsuit that was filed in 2021, at the end of 2021, by a woman named Marissa Root. She was a student at Utah Valley University. She had attended a party of football players who went to the University of Utah. It was an off-campus party, but they were mostly, U football players, and she was allegedly assaulted at that. And she, reported it to police, and then she also went to both UVU and the U to just try to get some resources, some support, some services for dealing with the aftermath of that. And she was turned away by both of the schools.
Before we get to the schools and this ruling and this earlier ruling about UVU, right? Let's go to the police. And I mean, in your story, somebody uses the word bungled. I guess that's not an inaccurate word for what the police did in this case.
Yeah, I talked kind of at length with Marissa about this and kind of all of the missteps that she says she saw and how her case was handled. And, she recounted going to the hospital and a nurse telling her that she was going to have to pay for her rape kit, which is not how that works. The victim is not supposed to have to pay for that. She went to the Unified Police Department to report the assault, and they lost evidence in her case, including a recording of the football player talking about it. They delayed sending her DNA. And then that, in turn hampers the prosecution of it in the court system. And so it was just, these kind of big missteps in how this case was handled.
So the perpetrator here, he accepted a plea deal, right?
That's right. Sione Lund, he's a former linebacker for the team. He originally faced three felony counts total, and he pleaded guilty to one felony count for attempted forcible sodomy.
And I guess again, the prosecutors might have been able to go for, more, right? But this recorded voice recording had been lost and other mistakes. But at least he did the plea deal and I guess admitted to some culpability here.
That's right. So he was sentenced to 30 days in jail and 10 years on the sex offender registry.
That's one of the big things that Marissa wanted, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah, she talked to me a lot about how the reason that she came forward was to try to protect other women, to essentially say, like, look, this is an unsafe individual, according to like what happened to her, and she just wanted to make sure that no one else would be victimized.
So let's move to the universities. Maybe Utah Valley University first. She was a student at Utah Valley University, right? Did she go to either school, UVU or University of Utah, to report this?
Yeah, she went to both. So she is actually finishing up her degree at UVU currently, but at the time of this too, she was still a student, and so she first went to her school, to UVU, to try to get some resources, and they turned her away and basically said, like, look, the alleged assailant in this case isn't a student here. We don't have to help you. And later, the judge in this case, ruled that they didn't have to help her because the alleged attacker didn't go there.
So then she sued, I think, right, under Title IX. Remind us what Title IX is.
Yes, Title IX is the law that basically says universities have to help students who are sexually assaulted, and they have to provide education essentially without discrimination too. So yeah, she went to UVU, they turned her down, and then important to note, she went to the UNext, and they also turned her down because they said she wasn't their student, so they didn't have to help, and that's what this latest ruling is about.
What did the judge say?
The judge basically agreed with the University of Utah. The U had submitted a long list of arguments, but he basically went through one and found that this one had applied, that essentially the U didn't have an obligation to help her because the attack didn't happen on U property. The U had kind of no control over this. You know, it was off campus, and even though it was one of its football players, it didn't control him. So it didn't have an obligation to provide any resources.
So you have a quote here from Daniel Carter, president of Safe Campuses. I'll just quote here. He previously said Title IX does not instruct schools to send their own students to the school of the alleged perpetrator for help. But even if it did, the second school should also have felt some responsibility. He says pass the buck is not good.
Right, that it could be deadly, essentially, that schools, regardless of where the student goes, has resources and could easily offer them. And I will say that the U says that it offered resources. Marissa Root says they did not offer her resources. That was a point of contention in the lawsuit, a point of difference.
So either University of Utah, Utah Valley University, either one, understandably that what they said in court, right? But have they said anything else? They've learned from this case, going to make adjustments?
You know, they're essentially both dismissed in the case, and the case is now overall kind of dismissed. Marissa could choose to appeal if she wanted to. At this point, she's thinking, she just wants to kind of move on from this experience and heal on her own. I mean, the U said that they hope that she heals, but she says, they didn't do anything to help with that process.
So I think University of Utah used similar arguments, reading from your story in the case of Lauren McCluskey, who unfortunately was murdered, right?
Yeah, that's right. This case was from 2018, and most people in the state have probably heard of this. But Lauren McCluskey was a student athlete who was going to the U. She had reported several times that her ex-boyfriend was essentially harassing and extorting her. She'd told campus police this multiple times. She called Salt Lake City police multiple times. She just really tried to get some help, and the response was kind of indifferent, and so she didn't ultimately receive any help and was later murdered. And the U used similar arguments when it was trying to deny responsibility when McCluskey's parents filed a lawsuit and basically said, like, the attacker in this case wasn't a student and we didn't have authority over him.
So, what is Marissa Root up to now? What is she saying?
Yeah, she is finishing up her degree at UVU. She is looking into public relations, and so she should be finished this coming fall with her degree in that. She said, and I think it's worth noting that, her life kind of didn't take the path that she wanted it to take, that this, was a really traumatic incident, and it had such a huge effect on her that she, made choices she wouldn't have otherwise. She just didn't feel like she was worthy. And so it took her time to essentially kind of get on the track that she wanted to be on. She's married now. She has a 2-year-old daughter, and she just wants to be an advocate at this point for other victims and survivors of sex assault.
Well, Courtney Tanner, a Salt Lake Tribune reporter, thanks for telling us about all these stories.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Appreciate that. You've been listening to Behind the Headlines, weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Hope you'll be with me next time.